Our next case for argument this morning is Corte against Exxon Mobil Coal.
Oh, God.
Ms. Livingston.
Good morning. May it please the court, Penny Livingston for Jerome and Lana Corte. When the lower court found that there were no genuine issues of material fact because he had barred the occupational health specialist from testifying as to the causation between exposure to coal waste dust and symptoms that were being suffered from by the Cortes, we took this appeal and voluntarily dismissed the property damage so that the only issues that would remain would be personal injury. The nature of this case is a personal injury case, and it is about air pollution, the air pollution that was caused from allowing 400 acres of coal waste product to be uncovered and remain just south of the Cortes' home, which is about 60 feet high, and the blowing dust has been well documented in the record, and
I take it that the Cortes themselves talked about dust blowing onto their property, and apparently there were some videos that showed dust. But how can we know that it was dust from the gob pile as opposed to anything else? Because it would seem that Dr. Orris admitted not knowing what the source of the dust was.
Correct. Dr. Orris had to rely on the Cortes to say that the dust that was, in fact, in their videos was from the gob pile. There are various photographs of the gob pile found through discovery and photographs taken by the Cortes and by their neighbors. So it would be for the jury to determine if, in fact, what they're seeing in the photograph is this 400 acres of what we call refuse disposal areas.
In the world, is that for an unassisted jury?
Well, I don't think it's for an unassisted jury. I think that...
Then we need some evidence from somebody competent to figure out the source of the dust. And that, of course, is the problem in this case, as the district court pointed out. You have not offered any evidence from anybody who is competent that the dust is from the coal mine rather than, say, from neighboring fields or lots of other sources of dust in foreign country.
Well, Illinois EPA has cited the coal mine for their dust. The coal mine has insisted on all the measures that they have taken to control their dust.
If there's coal dust in appreciable quantities on your client's property, it should be very easy to show. But am I correct in saying that there is no evidence in this record that anybody who can separate coal dust from corn dust has tested this dust to see whether it's coal or corn?
Dust has been tested on the Cortes property. It was below the background levels that were determined by Illinois EPA when they used St. Clair and Madison County in determining their backgrounds. It was so significantly below background levels for so many constituents that you would have to know that the background levels are not accurate.
Well, maybe this would help. Was there anything unique about the dust that would support the inference that it was coal dust as opposed to some other type of dust?
Okay. There are photographs that show the dust coming directly off of the gob pile. There was testing of the gob pile, which showed that it had sulfur in it, other constituents like PAHs that Dr. Orris testified to. And there is testimony of Illinois EPA that the samples that they took were at the insistence of the director because there were so many complaints about dust. You have all of the neighbors that have testified that they've seen the dust coming off the pile. You have Cy Corte saying that the dust primarily goes to Jerry Corte's house, even though he's had to wear goggles at times when he's been plowing his fields. The evidence that dust comes from the pile is overwhelming. If you even look at the request to admit, they haven't entirely denied that dust comes from their piles. They've said, well, in 2001 fall, we decided that we would take some measures to control it, so they put dust control measures on 45 acres of the 400 acres. So there's overwhelming evidence that dust comes from the pile. when you look at the causal link between the symptoms that are suffered by the Cordes and the exposure to coal dust, Dr. Orris is a very helpful witness in that respect. And the symptoms include such symptoms as dyspepsia and diarrhea, which would not be included in smoking and allergies, and the record does show that he did consider the alternative sources in determining his diagnosis, that in fact it is well known that coal dust exposure would cause the type of symptoms that they were suffering from. And he did rely on the Cordes telling him that they were exposed to a certain amount of dust, how frequently they were exposed to it, and then their photographic evidence of it. And the case law indicates that it is appropriate for experts to rely on the reports of others. By the way, the Illinois EPA samples, which I believe are inadmissible, but that are cited several times by the defense, those samples were taken after 3 days of rain. One of the samples still found 2 to 4% coal dust, and this was after they implemented their dust control measures. So there is some other independent evidence that there is coal dust blowing off site.
Did I hear you say, but that evidence is inadmissible, or did I hear wrong?
I think it's inadmissible because it does not meet the standards that you would need to utilize, since Dave Kolas himself said that sticky tape would not be the best approach and doing it after rain would not be the best approach, and that because you found certain quantities of certain things that maybe they didn't pick up all that they should have picked up. At any rate, in the Westbury case, it talks about the temporal connection between exposure to a substance and the onset of disease or the worsening of symptoms being a compelling evidence of causation. And here we have a connection from the exposure to coal dust. Dr. Orris did a study himself at Granite City Steel with respect to coal exposure, coal dust exposure. He indicated that he was relying on his clinical experience, his education, the reading of the literature. He discussed the NIOSH standards, exposure to particulates. Under the NIOSH standards, he talked about the National Institute of Cancer Research.
But help us.
Okay.
How do we get past the fact that Dr. Orris admitted not knowing what the source of the dust was?
He relied on the reports of the Cordes, his patients, with respect to the amount that they had been exposed to and with respect to what they had witnessed. And the neighbors verify what they're witnessing is real. Illinois EPA has cited them for dust. And at one point, Dr. Orris says in his deposition that it's only logical that if you leave this pile uncovered over a period of time, that the slurry would dry out and that it would become mobilized in the air as wind blew across it. I think it was appropriate for him to rely on the reported history of his patient when the patient had a video from the gob pile and is telling him that's where it is. Dr. Orris is not a geologist, and he's not a field scientist. He's a clinical physician. He is an occupational health specialist, and his specialty is in drawing connections between environmental exposure and symptoms.
That argument sort of makes the point for the exclusion of this. I mean, if that is all logical, then it should be capable of measurement, and it wasn't measured here. And this is a toxic tort case, and so you need some scientific explanation for the jury to find liability.
Are you referring to the issue of quantity?
Well, that's part of the basis for the exclusion, that the extent or quantity of the exposure to your clients is important, critical to the causation element here.
It is. When you look at the Walker case where they discussed the exposure to the talc, that doctor was not able to say how much talc was the employee exposed to because he wouldn't have been there to see how much.
Wasn't the anecdotal evidence in that case far more compelling than the anecdotal evidence here?
Well, the anecdotal evidence here is pretty compelling considering that we have so many people reporting long histories of dust, and we have all the photographic evidence. We have the rabbit on the video breathing the dust, and we have the fact that they are suffering the symptoms that would be characteristic of exposure to coal dust. Have I not answered your question?
You answered it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Livingston. Mr. Strassner.
May it please the court, my name is Peter Strassner. I represent the defendant in this case, the appellee, ExxonMobil Coal.
If you could raise your voice, it would help us.
ExxonMobil Coal USA, who operates under the name of the Monterey Coal Company, Your Honor. The plaintiffs claim in this case that they've been poisoned by toxic dust that they contend blows on occasion from Monterey's refuse disposal areas over and across roads and farm fields to their property, which is located approximately 1 mile from the closest point of the RDAs. As such, I would like to point out at the outset that this is not a simple slip and fall trauma case. This is a case involving, as I think the court noted earlier, alleged long-term exposure to alleged toxic substances.
Well, now, there is apparently some evidence in the record that dust was regularly blowing onto the Cordes property. Does the record tell us what might have been the source of that dust other than ExxonMobil's gob pile?
Your Honor, the Cordes live on a farm, and their property are surrounded by farms. The record, I believe, does, and I'm searching my memory for some specific examples, but I believe the record does show that there was other dust that blows on a regular basis out there. I think you can almost take judicial notice, though, that when farm fields are plowed, such as they are in the spring, and when crops are harvested in the fall, and those are the times of year when the Cordes allege that their symptoms are the worst, that you're going to get dust all over the place in the country. And that's a fact. There has been testimony to that effect. Of that, I am certain. Does that answer your question?
Well, I mean you know, for instance, I'm wondering about Cy and his testimony.
I believe, as recounted by Ms. Livingston just now, he said that that he was plowing the fields at the time that he noticed dust. I would like to state this, Your Honor, because we've tried to be candid all along in this. We have never claimed that dust has never blown from the RDAs. Okay, what we don't find is any evidence in the record that coal dust has blown on Mr. Cordy's property in any significant amount whatsoever. In fact, and I'd like to refer to some of Ms. Livingston's statements here, the IEPA did test, and the dust was tested by the IEPA. The dust on the Cordes property was tested by the IEPA and by the Illinois Department of Public Health. The soil was tested on the Cordes property as well, and the dust tests were taken both inside and outside the Cordes residence. There was no evidence of coal dust found whatsoever, and as you pointed out, Judge Easterbrook, if large quantities of coal dust were blowing on their property, one would think that it would show up in the empirical evidence.
Well, one would think if you knew what the limits of sensitivity are. Now, it's conceivable, I suppose, that somebody like Oris might say that people are medically sensitive to dust at levels below those that would be detected by the IEPA's testing. But I gather there's no such...
There's no such evidence of that in the record.
What you'd really need.
The plaintiffs here did no air monitoring whatsoever. They did do some sampling of themselves. You may recall from the complaint they alleged that
Can we get at this in a different way?
Certainly.
If you take the amount of dust that the gob pile is known to lose, if you take the amount of mass that the gob pile is known to lose, and apply normal models about how long those particles would stay in the air, could you calculate how much would drop out at given places downwind?
I'm not an air modeler myself,
no,
Your Honor, but I am familiar with some techniques of doing that.
Excuse me, counsel. Only one of us can talk at a time.
Yes, sir.
These kinds of things are done by environmental people. This is largely how one deals with particulate emissions from coal plants. And I assume that coal piles and coal plants have enough in common that perhaps the models would work about how long a particulate stays in the air. But I take it your answer is nobody has done that.
So nobody has done that in this case.
Wouldn't that be in ExxonMobil's interest to do that and figure out where the stuff is going from its pile of tailings?
Your Honor, we did do some testing. We did some soil testing. We also tested the composition of the RDAs because initially in this case there were lots and lots of allegations of toxic poisoning from metals. What we found in that testing was that we didn't have particularly high levels of metals on the RDAs, and the Cordes levels of metals were actually at or below background. Okay, so there was some testing done by ExxonMobil, Monterey Coal Company, did not do air monitoring per se. We were never asked to by the state. It could have been done. I don't quarrel with that, but it also could have been done by the plaintiffs in this case. And I agree with your statements. These things are susceptible to testing.
What matters at this point is that it hasn't been done. Nobody has done it, not the plaintiff, not the defendant.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'd also like to point out that, you know, even if you had proof of coal dust, and by the way, that the IEPA samples, where they did particle analysis from a sample on the Cordy property, showed no coal dust. Okay, the 2 to 4% sample that Ms. Livingston referred to was in fact a sample taken at another property in the area, and the Illinois Department of Public Health also concluded with respect to that sample that it was not a health hazard at 2 to 4%. I would also like to point out for the record, though, because I think it's tremendously important in this case, that there were numerous alternative causes. The court has already referenced other dust in the area, and there was other dust in the area. But in addition to that, the Cordys have been diagnosed as having seasonal, perennial, and animal allergies. And Dr. Orris himself admitted that several of the symptoms that they allege in this case could have, in fact, been caused by those allergies. So to say that they were caused by the coal dust is a real leap. Now, Mr. Cordy is a smoker, and you'll find that in Orris's records. He has a 35-pack-year history of smoking. According to Dr. Orris, he's also obese. According to Dr. Orris, he also drinks a 6-pack of beer a night. Okay, those factors themselves are large alternative causes of many of the generic symptoms, such as fatigue and headaches and sniffles and things like that, that the Cordys are suffering from.
Those alternate explanations for his symptoms don't address the admissibility of the expert's testimony. It would go to the weight the jury might give to that testimony, but not its admissibility.
I would beg to differ, Your Honor. Because this is a toxic exposure case, there has to be some ruling out, not of every potential alternative. The case law is clear on that. But the law does require that you rule out other major causes, or at least explain why your alleged cause, your opinion cause, is in fact valid in light of other potential causes. Dr. Orris never did that, and I think that's critical in this case. It's also a factor that distinguishes it from the Westbury case that Ms. Livingston alluded to. In that case, the doctor did a differential diagnosis where you systematically, in the definition of differential diagnosis, is in fact a process, a methodology, whereby you systematically look at other alternative causes and you rule them out one by one until you reach the most probable cause. Dr. Orris did not do that. In fact, he expressly said in his deposition, and this is in the record, he said that as between smoking, Mr. Cordy's smoking, and the so-called coal dust exposure, he could not say which was the precipitating factor. That's his testimony. He also admitted that allergies could cause the very same symptoms that the Cordys were complaining of. So there's nothing, if you're looking at reliability, which is what we're searching for here, there's nothing in the record that tries to distinguish between these alternative causes. Even his references to the literature do not move in that direction at all. He makes general references that, you know, my conclusions are based on my general knowledge of the scientific literature. But this court recently, in a case that came down, I believe earlier this month, in any event, it was after the briefing, held that you've got to do more than that. You've got to connect how the so-called scientific literature supports your specific conclusions in this case. I would submit to you that simply wasn't done by Dr. Orris. Now, there's an allegation in the briefs that he conducted a differential diagnosis, and I think that's to try to fit it within the Westbury case. But that didn't happen here. There is no systematic ruling out of alternatives. It just isn't there, and it's hard for me to prove a negative, so I invite you to look at the record on that issue. But Dr. Orris himself never says, I conducted a differential diagnosis, and in fact, he did not. He did not rule out other alternative causes. He's required to do so under the case law and in this type of a case, and he simply didn't do it. Another distinguishing factor from the Westbury case is the doctor in that decision actually, and there was an express finding that a differential diagnosis was conducted there, okay? Obviously, as I said, that didn't happen here. But in addition to that, that particular doctor tried some experiments where he removed the plaintiff in that case from the exposure, monitored the symptoms, put the plaintiff back in a situation where it was exposed. Nothing like that happened here. What you've got here is simply a doctor that looked at medical records that do not support his conclusions. He looked at a dust video of dust blowing on other people's property, okay, not on the Cordy's property. He looked at some pictures. He took medical exams, but the medical exams, obviously, that's what a doctor should do, but the medical exams don't support his opinion in this case either, because there were really no demonstrable symptoms of any significance at the time of the exam that Dr. Orris attributed to coal dust exposure. So what he's done here is, in essence, look at the Cordy's medical situation, listen to their complaints, and simply say, based on my knowledge, because I'm a doctor, this is what caused their symptoms. And I submit to you that not only did Judge Murphy not abuse his discretion in finding that sort of testimony unreliable, Judge Murphy was very right. I would also refer, and I'm running out of time here, but I'd also refer you to the Wins case, which I think is a very good case, fairly close on point, because it's an exposure case where other alternatives were not ruled out. I'd like to say one or two things about the punitive damage claim in this case also. Punitive damages were excluded. Judge Murphy held that the plaintiffs did not make a submissible case. If this court upholds Judge Murphy on the if you uphold Judge Murphy on the exclusion of Dr. Orris's testimony, the punitive damages is a moot issue. I would also like to note, however, that we, in our brief, lay out a lot of evidence of efforts that we took. We didn't sit by for 5 years and do nothing. We contest that, notwithstanding that the plaintiff's brief says it's uncontested. We contested very much. We also continuously looked and worked with the agency for a long-term fix, and the long-term fix, the time clock on the long-term fix, was controlled by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, not by Monterey Coal Company. We cooperated with them. The record is very clear on that issue and very consistent on that issue, and worked very hard to. We wanted to get these coal piles covered. We had to do it sooner or later, and we would have preferred to have done it sooner. But as Bill Buescher, the IEPA project manager, said, he felt it was more important to get it right than to get it done quick. And he was the one that controlled the time clock, because he was the one that would say, well, what about a synthetic membrane to cover these RDAs? What about a cap with 4 feet of soil versus a cap with 2 feet of soil? And the whole thing also was part of a groundwater protection program to keep impact from the RDAs on the Monterey site. It was all part and parcel of the same thing, and we really had no control other than to try to be diligent in responding to the state's request as to how long it took. Now, Ms. Livingston can certainly come back and say, well, they took too long for these reasons, but in her brief, that's not there. All she said was that we looked at a lot of cap alternatives, and in fact, we did, and we think that's a good thing because that's what IEPA told us to do. Okay, so I don't think that's a basis for punitive damages. That is certainly not beyond bad faith. Okay, the other thing I think she mentions is that at one point we negotiated with a third party to see if they were interested in buying the property. I don't think there's anything in the record that would suggest that caused a material delay, and I'm confident that there's nothing in the record that suggested that was in any way improper that we did that. Again, Illinois law does not favor punitive damages, and the standard there, whether you call it beyond bad faith or wanton and willful conduct, requires something that is very close to quasi-criminal conduct, bad faith, fraud or beyond fraud. Those are the formulations the Illinois state courts use. And the conduct in this case does not suffice. Thank you very much. We request that you affirm the district court in this case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Livingston?
The video that Dr. Orris viewed was actually a video that did show dust blowing from the god pile onto the Cordy's land, and it showed a rabbit that was gasping for air and was dying because of the dust exposure. There are neighbor videos, but they were not videos that the Cordy's had that they gave to Dr. Orris. With respect to the quantity, because that really seems to be an important issue, and I think I really need to address it, Dr. Orris relied upon the Cordy's recitation of the history and their documentation of the evidence of what the exposure would be. And that's what occupational health specialists do. They learn what the facts are with respect to the exposure. They look and see if there are characteristic symptoms from that and whether or not there would be a causal connection. The doctor did rule out smoking, and he ruled out allergies, and he ruled them out in the sense that he was looking at those as possible causes of respiratory illness, but the Cordy's, Jerry Cordy, for example, did not go in and complain about respiratory problems and coughing and chest pain until the dust started getting bad. He didn't go to the doctor till 2000. The pile had been uncovered at that point for 4 years. The pile remained uncovered with respect to punitives for nearly a decade. I'm not even sure that any of it's covered at this point, but in the record there is no cover on this, and they can talk about how they were working with Illinois EPA. Yeah, when you poison the water, you have to figure out what kind of cap to put on it. In Illinois law, we require landfills to put on daily cover to keep the dust under control. They didn't take any dust control measures whatsoever until the fall of 2001, and even at that point they were inadequate because the citation from EPA is after that date. If you look at the record, you will see that in 1999, and this is on page 132 in the appendix put forward by the Cordy's, you'll see that Exxon settled with several of the neighbors, and their own lab results said that the buildings that were being ruined in the neighborhood were being ruined by coal dust blowing on those buildings. And if you look at the settlement agreement on page 132, you'll see that it says, whereas it is possible that coal fines or particles from Exxon's mining operations were periodically blown by natural winds onto the premises of owner and possibly accelerated the deterioration of the roofs of owner's buildings located on the premises. And it goes on to talk about how they're going to pay for these damages. If their blowing dust can corrode metal buildings, it's not a far stretch that it could corrode a person's lungs. And when you look at what Dr. Orris says, he says that occupational medicine takes a qualitative approach in the sense that if you have exposure that is documented and you have the symptoms that you would get from that type of exposure and you rule out smoking didn't cause him to cough and go to the doctor before, his allergies didn't cause him to go to the doctor before, he doesn't go to the doctor at all except for knee surgery until he starts coughing and he's worried about why he's having chest pains. Turns out he's having chest pains because he coughs a lot. He coughs a lot because there's a lot of blowing dust from the god piles. These are produce farmers, and they plant their crops into the ground. They're outside most of the time. It is not a stretch that they would suffer from symptoms from the blowing dust from 400 acres of coal waste that's uncovered. If specialized knowledge will assist the jury to understand evidence or determine a fact and issue, then a witness is qualified as an expert because of his knowledge, skill, and training. Dr. Orris knows what he's doing. He's an occupational health specialist. He's done studies himself at Granite City Steel. He's relied on the literature. He says in his deposition, which when Ray Massey asks him what he bases it on, he says, the known toxic effects of coal dust, the known toxic effects of hydrocarbons that are often on top of the particles in this material, the irritant effects of sulfur, and it's specifically in combination with the water in the upper respiratory tract, the history of exposure, the consistent laboratory findings with the PFTs, the pulmonary function tests that were done, my experience in the field, my knowledge of the literature in the field, and my physical examination and history that we took on that day. I don't know what else the doctor could do. He's not a geologist, and he doesn't go out and he doesn't take tests. Dr. Yarbrough went out and took tests, and Dr. Yarbrough, who is a geologist, also documented dust coming from the pile. The primary attacks on Dr. Yarbrough in the lower court were with respect to his findings on groundwater, but he also documented the dust. And the lab results from Exxon's own tests that they ran on neighboring properties in 99 show that this coal dust is having an impact on the neighborhood. It's very well documented that the dust is blowing all over. Their own toxicologist says that the prevailing wind direction is from south to north, which is where the Cordes are, directly north of where this is at. What is between them and the gob pile is a cornfield. Most of the year it's empty, the corn grows, then it's harvested. But while they're planting, there's no corn in that field. And there's one road, and then there's the farm field, and then there's the gob pile. And the gob pile's been blowing on them for 10 years. It is only logical that they would have an impact in their health from that. And the doctor knows what the characteristic symptoms are, and he has documented those characteristic symptoms as the exposure.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.